Hello, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. I'm so excited. I was saying before, it's not going to get old for me for a long time to see your faces. This is so fun and so exciting. Before we begin our reading for tonight, which, by the way, is cameo number 2, My Strength Will Support You is the title, and it's page 1694 in the CE edition. Before we start reading that, I do just want to remind everybody that the Love Lens program that I am a part of, our first video will be released on Tuesday. I'm putting the sign up link in the chat, and I'll post the link on the Facebook replay also. If you're interested in tuning in, that will be the link to do so. And it also enables you to join our pop-up Facebook group and get the replays, even though I think we're going to be sharing the replays publicly regardless, but it's a good way to just keep in touch for the time being about the program. So that is that. And I think that's the only announcement that I have. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's begin our session as we do with a period of meditation. So if you are able to just pause and be for the next few minutes, if you'd like, allowing your eyes to close and turning attention within. Although the surface of the mind might feel full of chatter, and although feelings might be present of fear, of stress, of anxiety or sadness or struggle or suffering, all of these experiences are on the surface of our mind, and they're there to convince us that that's all that there is, that we need not look any deeper, because there's nothing there, and we know that that's not true. So just imagining that collectively here for these moments, we're allowing our mind to just sink more deeply into the center of our being. And at this center, beneath the chatter, beneath the fear, is blazing, shining, joyous love. It radiates peace. It radiates certainty. It gives us our certainty. And this is what is real. I'm just being willing to touch this place within, even if you don't feel anything, it's simply a willingness to go there. And as always, we can offer our willingness to Holy Spirit. In this holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Spirit in charge tonight by our request. Knowing that we will hear what we need to hear, share perhaps what we need to share, and where two or more are joined, and there are many more of us than just two, where two or more are joined, the ego does not stand a chance because it is absolutely nothing. Who we are is unshakable. So taking a nice mindful and deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Oh, thank you everybody for being here. This is so fun. Hello, Paula and Paul and Irene. Irene Tompkinson is here. What a joy. Oh, wow. Steve, Andrea, welcome everybody. I mentioned last week on the thread of this video in our Facebook group that I would just share a very quick funny story about my background picture, which is like one of those, you know, it's not my real background. I haven't been in quite some time, but I love going on silent mindfulness meditation retreats. And the place that I go to is the Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts. And they have their center. And then they also have a forest refuge. And the forest refuge is where people go for month-long retreats to retreats that are years. So the place that I go is for like the newbies that go for, you know, 10 days, maybe 2 weeks. This forest refuge is a place where people might go for like years, and it's silence and it's self-guided and it's nobody's speaking. They're in silence for however long that they're there. Well, during my orientation, the first time that I went, it was a 5-day silent retreat. They said, don't go near the forest refuge. And they explained everything that I just explained. Don't talk to them. Don't go near there. So I'm on a hike. It's beautiful. It's up again, Western Massachusetts. It's beautiful. I'm on a hike. I get lost. I stumble upon the forest refuge and I start panicking because it's like dinner time and I'm supposed to be back at the retreat center. So I asked somebody for directions and he was on, you know, I don't know how long he had been there, but I broke the rules and spoke to somebody at this forest retreat refuge. So this is their meditation hall and it's just a beautiful, beautiful space. So that's my funny story. Very, it's kind of classic Corinne. So anyway, let's go ahead and get started. Cameo 2, we are reading My Strength Will Support You. And this is a beautiful, beautiful cameo essay where it's so relatable. Helen keeps getting distracted. So Helen Schuckman, the scribe, keeps getting distracted and Jesus keeps bringing her back. And reminding her, you'll see what he reminds her of. But I just can so relate to that because of my own monkey mind, as I'm sure you all can too. So John had volunteered to read with me. John, I just want to make sure you have control over your mute. Are you good?
Yeah, I'm good.
You're good. Excellent. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and get started. So cameo 2, My Strength Will Support You. On the morning of October 21st, 1965, near the very beginning of the dictation of the miracle principles, right after principle 3, Helen had a revealing exchange with Jesus, one that tells us a great deal about him as a teacher. So this is Jesus speaking. You are breaking communication by thinking it's cute. This is not wrong, but it diverts your attention. And breaking, the way that it's spelled, just parenthetically, is either a misspelling or a pun. John, you can go ahead.
Jesus is surprisingly agreeable about Helen's thought that it's cute. The problem that the thought is not that it's false, nor that it's bad. The problem is simply that it diverts her attention away from what he is saying. Helen has something to learn from him. It's vital, therefore, she pays attention. Helen, that's true.
Jesus, of course it's true, and I'm really glad you got the idea. I am not angry when this kind of thing happens, but the lesson deteriorates under lack of focus. Please read these three. Oh, I'm sorry, John. That's you.
Please read these 3 points with collaterals. As often as you can today, because there may be a quiz this evening. This is merely to introduce structure. If it is needed, it is not to frighten you.
And that was with corollaries. Please read these 3 points with corollaries. So we'll actually read the 3 points after we're done reading this. Thank you for that, John. There is not a trace. So this is now Robert Perry's commentary on what we just read, the quotes from Helen and Jesus. So Robert writes, there is not a trace of sternness or judgment here. Jesus is not angry when Helen's attention is diverted. and he freely expresses his happiness when she gets what he's trying to say. He is entirely on her side. He just wants her to learn, period. It's not about appeasing him. It's about her own learning.
For this reason, he urges her to read and reread the first three principles throughout the day. Because there might be a quiz that evening, although there's no evidence of such a quiz actually happening, he reassures her that this is not meant to frighten her into submission. It is just meant as a useful structure that will help her learn.
Helen says, "Well, would you regard this as a kind of miracle, maybe?" And then Jesus responds, "You better reread them now. There is nothing special or surprising about this at all. The one thing that happened was the universal miracle, which was the experiences of intense love you have felt. Don't get embarrassed," and the urtext adds, "by the idea of love. Things that are true are not embarrassing. Embarrassment is only a form of fear, and actually a particularly dangerous form because it reflects egocentricity. No, don't think of how Bill will find this fascinating either. I told you to reread them and you did not." And then Helen says, "I am now."
Helen's attention has been diverted again. Ignoring the instructions to reread the first three principles, she asks if communicating with him could be considered a miracle. This is an understandable reaction. She is, after all, having a conversation with a voice that claims to be Jesus. He finds a way to answer her question while at the same time drawing her back to his focus. He says, in effect, if you reread the first three principles, you'll see that the ability to communicate with me is not a miracle, that a miracle is an expression of love. Therefore, your experience of intense love were experiences of the universal miracle. This probably refers to the preceding summer in which Helen had a number of experiences of being in a crowd and feeling a brief, powerful affinity with everyone there. One of such experiences, she said, "a sudden sense of deep emotional closeness to everyone there swept over me."
At the mention of these experiences, Helen becomes embarrassed by the love she felt, a theme that will crop up repeatedly in the early dictation. This represents yet another diversion. Helen is pulling away from his teaching into self-concern. Rather than offering reassuring sympathy, therefore, Jesus quickly pops the bubble of her embarrassment. "It is not humility," he says, "but rather dangerous egocentricity."
Then she pulls away yet again, musing to herself about whether Bill will find this fascinating. Jesus again brings her back to the task at hand. "I told you to reread them, the principles, and you did not." And finally she yields, "I am now." This seems to set the stage for a touching communication that follows.
Jesus says, "Do not feel guilty about the fact that you are doubting this. Just reread them and their truth will come to you. I love you. And I am not afraid or embarrassed or doubtful. My strength will support you, so don't worry and leave the rest to me."
Jesus now addresses what probably lurks in the background behind all her diversions. Helen is feeling guilty about doubting his teachings. As a solution, he again brings her back to what he has asked her to do three times already: reread them. If she does that, the truth of the principles will come to her and her doubts will be vanished.
Helen's guilt over her own doubt seems to be part of a larger feeling of inadequacy as a learner, for that is what Jesus speaks to next. Her fear, embarrassment, and doubt all erect barriers to her learning. As long as those feelings are there, How can she really learn what he's teaching? She can, implies Jesus, because he is there. And he not only loves her, as he openly tells her, but he is also free of all the barriers that hold her back. The quote is, "I am not afraid or embarrassed or doubtful." Therefore, she can just relax and lean on his strength.
Do not run to tell to Bill to tell him. There will be time, but don't disrupt things. I'll arrange the schedule. You have a lot to do today. Get dressed or you'll be late. But when you do see Bill, be sure you tell him how much help he helped you through by giving you the right message. And don't bother with worrying about how you received it. That doesn't matter either. You were just afraid.
Here's yet another diversion. Helen wants to run off and tell Bill what has happened. But rather than Jesus urging her yet again to reread the principles, time has moved on and the priority is now for her to get dressed and get to work. We might expect him to urge her to stay with this monumentous happening, talking to Jesus, and get to work late. Instead, however, he shows that he is concerned with the rest of Helen's life. As important as their communication is, he doesn't want it to get in the way of her other responsibilities. He even offers to arrange the schedule for her.
Then he shows his concern for Bill. Helen later wrote in her autobiography that when Jesus first began dictating the course to her, she called Bill in a panic, saying that, quote unquote, the voice she had been hearing was now using very specific words and seemed to want to go on for some time. Bill made a simple and very practical suggestion. Try and write some more and see what happens. Jesus' comments above seem to be a reference to that phone call. If so, then Helen apparently did receive that suggestion very gracefully at the time, and Jesus wants Bill to know just how apt it was. And he wants Helen to not feel guilty for responding ungratefully. That doesn't matter either. You were just afraid.
Here, at the very beginning of the course, we have a revealing glimpse of how Jesus, the teacher, relates to his students. Helen, as we have seen, gets caught up in various diversions. This is cute. Is this a miracle? I feel embarrassed. I wonder what Bill will think. I've got to run and tell Bill. Many of these diversions, it seems, come down to one thing, an understandable fascination with the idea of Jesus Christ dictating A Course in Miracles to her. It's like a celebrity showing up at your class who has an important message to deliver, but all you can think about is the fact that a celebrity is standing right there in front of you.
In the midst of Helen's very human reaction, Jesus holds fast to his single agenda: to get across his teachings. He is as focused as she is distracted. Therefore, no matter in what direction she pulls away, he keeps pulling her back to the principles that he has just dictated to her, telling her again and again to reread them. He even asks her to do so throughout the day because there might be a quiz. He doesn't ignore her questions or her doubts. Rather, he tells her that she'll find the answers in the very principles he is asking her to study.
Even though he stays firm with his agenda, he makes it abundantly clear that this has nothing to do with her doing what the authority says in order to be good or in order not to be bad. This is only about her learning. Thus, no matter what she says, he does not get angry with her. And rather than inducing fear or guilt in her to spur her into doing his bidding, he actively tries to relieve those feelings. When he needs to correct her, he follows this with reassurance. This is not wrong. I am not angry. Those are the examples. And when she does receive his teaching, he is quick to tell her how glad he is. He wants nothing, not her distractions, not her embarrassment or doubt or guilt, and not any need she imagines she has to get in the way of her learning. He is purely he is there purely for her.
His whole demeanor reinforces this impression. He is present, engaged, and clearly concerned. He tells her how he feels about her reactions. I'm really glad you get the idea. And he tells her how he feels about it. I love you. And he explains himself. He does not leave her in a state of mystery, having to trust in his almightiness, but rather tells her plainly why he says what he does. The lesson deteriorates under lack of focus. This is merely to introduce structure if it is needed.
He even offers to make up for any lacks she may have as a learner. As he explains toward the end, he is free of all these lacks. Thus, no matter how inadequate she may feel, she can rest on his love and strength, let go of her worry, and leave the rest to me.
This snapshot of Jesus's will to teach meaning that. Sorry. This snapshot of Jesus's will to teach meaning Helen's desire to pull away surely applies to more people than just her. What students of a course does not get drawn off in diversions and distraction? And when that happens to us, we can envision that the same teacher that was there with Helen is here with us, single-mindedly, yet patiently and lovingly, drawing us back to his teachings.
Awesome. Thank you so much, John, for reading with me.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay. So we have a lot of themes, I feel, that we can review in this cameo. And I just have to tell you right off the bat that one of the reasons that I love this cameo is that I personally relate to Helen, because when I was writing my book, I literally would sit down to write and I'd say, "Up, I'm hungry. Up, I'm thirsty. Up, gotta go use the bathroom. Up, I should check my email." Like I was like her. I had all these different distractions coming up and I had to keep getting brought back. I was not hearing Jesus's voice all that clearly, I'll tell you that, not like her. So let's review some of the themes here. And I'll say a few things, and then I'd love to open it up for questions and for comments. One of the things that just strikes me is how caring Jesus is with Helen. He clearly, and I feel like Robert Perry in his commentary drives this home in this reading, that he's clearly there for her and is concerned about her learning, is not there to judge, is not there to condemn, is not there to, you know, say that she's bad in any way. He's just focused on her learning. And he says so beautifully how he loves her. And you can imagine he's saying those words to you, because we're all Helen. Particularly the sentence where he says, "Do not feel guilty about the fact that you are doubting this." And he's referring specifically, I think, to like the whole process and maybe those first miracle principles, excuse me. But we all have doubts. I know all of us as course students, I've had my own doubts before. And I can remember in the in-person study group years ago that I was in with Paula and Carol and Pat, that my mom and my stepdad facilitated, we had a gentleman, Bill, who his book was like a mangled mess because he, from time to time, would be like, "It's all lies." And he'd just throw it across the room and it would just like, you know, splatter and like chunks of pages would fall out, but he still would pick it back up and assemble the book back together again. So we've all had doubts, and that's a normal part of the process. But Jesus is saying, reread them. The truth will come to you as you study. And he wants Helen to study. He prompts her several times in this reading to read the first three miracle principles. And I want to talk about that. So we're going to come back to that, but I'm not going to talk about that at this moment, but we are going to go there. So Jesus is a gentle, caring, loving teacher, and he is here with all of us. If you knew who walks beside you on the way that you have chosen, fear would be impossible. our problem is that we don't know that he is with us. And one of the things that I wanted to highlight that just resonates with me in this cameo is how he emphasizes that he is outside of fear. So we need to simply rely on him, because, you know, we can easily say that, like, we're very much caught up in fear and get bogged down in all sorts of minutiae. But Jesus is outside of that. He's free of all these limits that we've imposed upon ourselves. He's free of embarrassment. He's free of distractions. He's free of fear. So it's our task to lean on him. And yet we don't even have to, it's almost like there's a leap of faith that has to happen. How can we lean on him when we're not trusting? Leaning on him requires some trust, but if we're not feeling trust, you know, how do we get there? So there is a little bit, in a sense, of a leap of faith, but a question came up before we started recording. And I'm wondering if a number of us can relate. With the world, I was speaking with a friend before, and she was saying that the world is very uncomfortable right now. And I was just like, yes. And isn't that also a beautiful thing? Because it's showing us the degree to which this world right now is shaking us up, the degree to which we're shaken shows us how much we've tried to plant roots here in this world. And planting roots here in this world is only going to lead to feeling shaken, to feeling fear, to feeling totally unnerved, because no roots here can sustain us. Trying to plant roots here in this world is like trying to plant roots in quicksand. It's not going to work. So instead, we have to go within. We have to say, you know, Spirit, we don't have to say, I trust. We can say, I'm willing to trust. I'm willing to plant my roots in a much deeper place. Help me, show me, help me, help me, help me. And it goes back, what comes to mind is that story that I shared in my book, and I've shared this a million times, I feel like, on our study group calls, because it was such a pivotal learning experience for me. But it was when I had to go for, long time ago, had to go for blood work. If you remember that story, the nurse said some things that were very triggering to me, and I almost passed out in the doctor's office. And then I had to go to a hospital for more lab work, more blood work, which was even a bigger trigger for me. And when I was at that hospital parking lot to go in and do that lab work, I kept saying, I'm willing to see witnesses for love. I am willing to see witnesses for love. And I offer this to all of us as a reminder that we can come into a state of being willing to see witnesses for love when, if we're looking out into the world through our body's eyes, we are going to see witnesses for fear. And there are ample opportunities right now to see witnesses for fear in the world. So we have to pause and change our direction, turn the other way, and say, instead of these witnesses for fear, I am willing to see witnesses for love. I don't know what those witnesses are, but show me. And in this example that I have in my book, that was when I went into this hospital outpatient lab, and the mother of a college roommate of mine was working there. I didn't even know she was a nurse. She walked me in the back, did the lab work. I had no pass out response. And when I was leaving, she said, Corinne, it was a Monday. She said, I never work on Mondays, and I got called in 30 minutes before you showed up. So that to me was a beautiful witness for love that I was able to fully appreciate because of my willingness to see witnesses for love instead of witnesses for fear. Another thing that I want to offer for anybody who's feeling unsteady or shaken or a high degree of fear right now with everything happening in the world is to, I've been calling it an anxiety blueprint. I don't know if that's exactly the right term, but if you sit down with a piece of paper and start writing out, following, tracing from when the trigger happens to the thought that comes in, to the feeling that you get, to the belief that that reflects, it's almost like when you look closely at the blueprint of how the anxiety spiral begins, it's as if exposing it gives you that opportunity to bring it to the light, to bring it to Holy Spirit, to say, hey, this is happening right now. I'm willing to see differently. So that's just another little technique that might be helpful. So again, it involves noticing when you get triggered into fear and writing down first, what was the trigger? Then what was the thought? What's the physical feeling happening in your body? What's the underlying belief that's there? It's always that we're a body, usually. I'm sure there's more that we can uncover. And as you expose that, then being willing to see it differently with Holy Spirit. So I just wanted to offer that. And I just said that really quickly. So if anybody needs me to repeat anything, please just pop on and let me know. I'll actually pause for a moment before I keep talking. Would anybody like to ask a question or share a comment? Looks like we're good. So I'll say a few other words, and I want to read those first three miracle principles. Before we go there, there's just so many other beautiful things. Okay, so let's talk about the section where it says Helen gets embarrassed. We tend to think of embarrassment as like humility, right? Like, oh, I feel embarrassed. Like it's not a big deal to feel embarrassed, but he calls it dangerous egocentricity. Like that kind of sounds like a heavy duty description, dangerous egocentricity. So it's not humility. If you can think of a time when you felt embarrassed, what happens in that feeling of embarrassment? But it's all about you, right? It's all about me. It's all about how do I look? How am I being perceived? How am I being received? And that embarrassment really brings us into ego. It really brings us into a place where it's all about me, me, me. So I feel like this is a great reminder. Here's the line exactly. It says, things that are true are not embarrassing. Embarrassment is only a form of fear, and actually a particularly dangerous form because it reflects egocentricity. So embarrassment might not be something that we immediately think to take to Holy Spirit when we're feeling it. We can immediately go into wanting to hand it over to the Holy Spirit when we feel the hard stuff, like the anxiety or the depression. But even something like embarrassment is an opportunity to see that differently as well, to say, hey, Holy Spirit, I'm really focused on Corinne right now because I'm feeling embarrassed. Help me see this differently. And there are times, the Course says elsewhere, that there might be times when we're guided to say things or do things that we find embarrassing, and yet it came from guidance. And so we need not be concerned. We need just basically rest and trust that we were prompted to say whatever we were prompted to say, and that it's okay. I'd also love to just comment here on Jesus arranging the schedule. This is another piece that I just really love, because if Jesus is outside the ring of fear, if he's outside the minutiae of the day and outside of how we get caught up in the busyness of the day, if we can turn over, if we can trust and hand over all the minutiae, he said he's going to arrange it for Helen. And if he's going to arrange it for Helen, he's going to arrange it for us. And in the past, I know I've shared examples of having like a really long to-do list, feeling really overwhelmed, feeling like I'm never going to get through it all, and feeling fairly stressed out. And then kind of being like, okay, I just forgot again that I have this amazing pathway called A Course in Miracles, and I can ask for help here. And in those exact circumstances, going from feeling overwhelmed with a list of 10 things that had to be done yesterday to feeling a sense of ease and grace even in those things easily getting done. So that's a beautiful reminder about Jesus arranging the schedule. Any comments or questions so far? Anything that stands out to you? Courtney wrote, the last line is so beautiful. I agree. It is.
I'm just curious if anybody else gets that feeling sometimes of wanting a break. And I mean, I know the course goes every day, you know, 365 or 66 this year, days a year. And I'm just wondering if there's anyone else that feels like, I just need a break sometimes.
A break from all the love, right?
Yeah, I know.
I saw some people nodding in agreement, and anybody is welcome to share. But John, I'll share with you and everybody. The first time I did the lessons, it took me 4 years. Four. You heard that right. And I can be a bit of a perfectionist. So if I get into that mode with the course and with the workbook lessons, I'm losing the lesson. It's much better for me to allow myself to be where I am. And if I need a break, that I take it, that there's no guilt. Jesus is still with you. You know, the Holy Spirit's still with you. The course is teaching us that we are not alone, that we have a guide that walks with us every step of the way. And that guide's with you whether you're doing your workbook lesson for the day or not. Now, I know what I'm saying is probably in contrast. I know that, like Robert Perry, he tends to teach being very studious. That's him. That's a strength that he has. That's not me. I don't know that I've ever done a lesson every single day within 365 days. I've come close to that at times, but it took me 4 years the first time. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Corinne, I very often take a break.
Do you, Paula?
Very often. Then I find, I better start doing those lessons again. Mm-hmm. Because that's when I get really, you know, screwed up and caught up in the world and the whole thing. So I just use it as I need it. And I need it a lot, actually. But when I feel like taking a break, I take a break. But gee, there's no guilt. It's fine.
No guilt. And Paula, you just said something key, and now I'm already blanking on your exact words, but you said, I find I need it a lot. We'll get into, and this is when I've been close to doing a lesson every day within, again, a little more than 365 days. It's because I want to, because I need it. I'm like, yeah, I'm all in. When I'm needing a break, sometimes resistance comes up. Sometimes I do need to step back. And actually, Irene just posted in the chat, and this is, I feel like, part of it too. She wrote, I need to sometimes just pause and let it saturate me. I need to absorb it. Yeah. And I feel like that's part of the process too, where this is a different thought system. This is literally a thought system that is out of this world. And we need to sometimes just step back and let ourselves absorb it, let it sink in. I'm a believer that I used to listen to this on my headset, falling asleep, and sometimes it wouldn't shut off. I'd fall asleep and it would still be going. And I believe it's still getting in there. Paula, are you going to add something?
The contrast is necessary, actually. You know, when you're not in tune with the course, there's contrast. It's like, you know, I must not be thinking with God here. And then, you know, and the anxiety comes, the stress comes. And it's just so fabulous to be able to go back to it. And I get immediate results. Mm-hmm. I'm always able to. Lucy, get. She can't
get off. Lucy, now we can see her.
You see her tail?
I see her tail.
Yes.
Aww. Okay. Thank you, Paula. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
So much. Anybody else want to chime in? Andrea.
I was going to say that I really relate to the part in, it's sort of in the middle where it says, Helen's guilt over her own doubt seems to be a part of a larger feeling of inadequacy as a learner. Mm. I really relate to that part. And that's the very thing that gets in my way. It's when I'm judging my own self as a learner or my progress. Or lack of progress, or needing to take a break, or forgetting to do it that day, or whatever. If there's one thing I do every day, it's that I don't do anything every day. Nothing I do every day exactly the same way. So the more I just accept that that's how I am, I sort of feel like then it's not getting in the way of my learning anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful to be able to accept that that is the way that you are and to not allow that to get in the way of your learning. I relate to what you just highlighted as well. And to me, just like you've said, it comes down to letting yourself be where you are, because when we get into that headspace of judging ourselves as students, judging ourselves in terms of our progress or lack of progress, that's when we're back on an ego downward spiral and we're literally just putting up blocks to love. So letting ourselves be where we are and just knowing that it is all okay is to me a very important part of the process. Thank you for that, Andrea. That was really helpful. Anybody else? How about we read? I would love to go back to the very beginning of the course when this dialogue happened. So we are told in this cameo that this sort of conversation that Helen just had with Jesus that we just read about happened right after miracle principle number 3. And he's telling her in this cameo to read and reread and study the first 3 principles in case there's a quiz. And as it says in the cameo, there's never any evidence that Jesus actually quizzed Helen later that day, but I think he was just, this is his sense of humor. I think he was just, you know, playing around with her and helping her see that this is worth actual serious study. Let's go. So if you have the CE, so whatever edition, if you have a different edition, you can just go to chapter 1, the very beginning of chapter 1. And we're just going to read the first 3, and I'll just read through these because it's brief. So this is in the CE edition, I'm on page 7. Whatever edition you have, I think FIP, it might be page 3, very beginning of the book. What's awesome about the CE is that it goes according to Helen's handwritten notes. So the first sentence of A Course in Miracles, according to Helen's notes, is, "You will see miracles through your hands, through me." So let's read these first 3 principles that Jesus wants Helen to review a number of times and to study in case there's a quiz. Number 1, the first principle of miracles is that there is no order of difficulty among them. One is not harder or bigger than another. They are all the same. Number 2, miracles in themselves do not matter. They are quite unimportant. And number 3, miracles occur naturally as expressions of love. The real miracle is the love that inspires them. In this sense, everything that comes from love is a miracle. And I'm going to read, there's just some, it's part of miracle principle number 3. I'm going to just read what comes below this. It says, this explains their lack of order. All expressions of love are maximal. This also explains why miracles in themselves do not matter. The only thing that matters is the source. And this is far beyond human evaluation. Please read these 3 principles as often as you can today, as if there were going to be a quiz this evening. This is merely to introduce structure if it is needed. It is not to frighten you. Do not feel guilty if you are doubting these principles. Just reread them and their truth will come to you. My strength will support you, so don't worry and leave the rest to me. All miracles mean life, and God is the giver of life. He will direct you very specifically. Plan ahead is good advice in this world, where you should and must control and direct where you have accepted responsibility. But the universal plan is in more appropriate hands. You will know all you need to know. Make no attempts to plan ahead in this respect. Now, one of the reasons why I love these miracle principles so much, in Course Companions, Robert Perry's commentary for this section, he says something to the effect of, for those of us who have sort of been raised on the idea that miracles are shifts in perception, a shift in perception, which they are, we have to kind of put that to the side. It's almost like we have to come to the Course with fresh eyes, because the definition of a miracle as a shift in perception has been passed around from course group to course group to course group, from teacher to teacher to teacher. And yet in the book itself, what we're reading here is the most frequently referred to definition of a miracle in A Course in Miracles, even in the FIP edition, that miracles are expressions of love. The shift in perception is part of it, but that's only part of it. The other part of it that is just as important is that miracles are expressions of love. And putting this definition together with how the Course starts in this edition, you will see miracles through your hands through me. It actually paints a picture of a miracle that's not just up here. It's not just in our minds. It's something that can flow through us that we can do. You will see miracles through your hands through me. It can be actions. It can be expressions of love that come through us. And this, I get so excited about this because this has turned my whole understanding of A Course in Miracles upside down in the best possible way, because for a very long time, I was stuck on just the shift in perception definition, which again, it's true. That's also a definition of a miracle and it's important, but it was overemphasized in my mind with miracles occurring naturally, miracles being expressions of love. That was sort of de-emphasized in my mind in terms of what miracles are. So these first three miracle principles, there's no order of difficulty among them. One is not harder or bigger. They're all the same. The miracles don't matter. They're quite unimportant. And that miracles occur naturally as expressions of love. And the real miracle is the love that inspires them. So it says in this sense, everything that comes from love is a miracle. These are the things that Jesus wanted Helen to study and wanted her to know. And if we want to have some fun, we can commit these first three miracle principles to memory and pretend we're going to get quizzed later by Jesus. Any comments or questions about these miracle principles, these first three, or how they've struck you? Faden wrote, it seems Jesus gives us a prescription. He says, no matter what we are feeling, we can rest on his love and strength, let go of what's bothering us, and leave the rest to Jesus. Faden, that makes me take like a nice sigh. No matter what we are feeling, we can rest on his love and strength and let go of what's bothering us and leave the rest to him. Of course, our heads can get in there and take back the worry and take back control. But yes, this is absolutely what we are being told we can do. And Andrea wrote, and let go of the fact that we might feel bothered about feeling bothered too. Yes. Oh, that ego loves to get in there, doesn't it? Oh. So any comments about this or questions? And I see Carla. Welcome, Carla. Hi.
I have a comment.
Yes, who's that? Me? Oh, hi, Irene. Yes.
I think this connects. I had a really dear friend. I was her sponsor in AA, and I was with her the last year of her life. And before, it was probably about 36 hours before she died, transitioned, and she knew she was transitioning, right? And those of us that were supporting her knew that too. She was very, very, very weak from the cancer. So I'm going to say this in a voice that's much, much stronger than the voice she said it in, all right? But one of the things I said, Carrie, when you, now you know you're at the end of this, do you regret anything? And she said, oh my God, Irene, I regret everything. But what I clearly, clearly know now is it doesn't matter. You know, and there was like this, and she said, because what I have seen, she said, I keep seeing the other side. She called it the other side. I keep seeing the other side, and it's pure love. And it's a love I can't describe to you because it's different than the love we experience here. And she said, I know that's all there is. And she said, I'm telling you this. And as I've looked in retrospect, I realized it was a huge gift because she was so, so frail. And so, you know, she was fighting to like hang on. And she said, I know how many people you influence and I want you to have this. I want you to have this. So I got this magic. I wrote about her in my last book. And where I'm coming from is my first response to this magical, magical gift that was 10 years ago that has just affected me so much, right? My first response was, what do you mean it doesn't matter? You know, like my ego was like, well, I want to know when I get to the other side, I'm going to find out I was right, you know? And it's like, who's ever in management over here is going to say, oh, you were so right, my dear. And those other people just didn't understand you that disagreed with you or whatever. But I just watched this like, what do you mean it's not, it doesn't matter, you know? And then I was like, oh my God, I almost gagged myself with my own ego because it was just too hard to accept. Like there was nothing to feel guilty about. There was nothing to fear. There was nothing to take a stand about, you know, there was, I have played that over 1,000 times in my head and realized what a gift it was from her. And then I got really involved in the course after that. And more I've seen it in the course again and again and again and again. To this past, I'll hurry up, this past weekend, was it this past weekend? Not the weekend we're in right now, last week, I took a whole weekend off of absolutely no news, none whatsoever, not even 15 minutes or whatever. And I was in such freedom from that, right? So Sunday night I thought, wow, that was really good, but oh, I can't keep this up. Tuesday night's the debate, I gotta see the debate, right? And then this voice said, why? Why do you have to see the debate? You already know who you're going to vote for, and you're watching the debate isn't going to change anyone else's mind. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. And it was like, yeah, but what will I do? You know, like, I don't know. I felt very irresponsible somehow in the world of my craziness. So the idea came, make a fire in the backyard. So I told my husband, and he's like, I'm on board. So we went out to the yard, and we made a fire during the time. The weather was phenomenal. The air, I'm in New Hampshire, the air was gorgeous. Two other people came and joined us. It was such a circle of absolute love of the moment and just being in it. Mm. And it all came from saying, it doesn't matter. I don't know if this makes any sense, but there was just this calmness about it that was so ego free. You know, which it, trust me, that's not a usual case for me, you know, but I'm getting better at it. Anyway, that all reminded me of that, about just how calm Jesus was to her. Just how calm, like lighten mm-hmm. up. It's okay. It doesn't matter. You don't have to do this every day. You don't have to do this every moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, Irene.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. Thank you for that story. I'm so grateful that you felt prompted to share that story, because we need to hear that. We need to hear that like 1,000 times. And when that's what I love about doing these calls, is because when we share stories like that, not only is it just a good reminder for you, but it's reinforcing that in all of us. And to hear somebody who is making their transition say that they're seeing the other side and saying that it doesn't matter because it's all love. That reminds me of, I just love the story. If you remember Siskel and Ebert, the acclaimed movie critics, and Roger yep. Ebert, when he was dying, he was going in and out of consciousness, and he turned to his wife, you know, at one point when he was conscious, and he says,
this is all an elaborate hoax. And she thought he was just like on too many pills at that point, you know, too much drugs. And then she realized, like, wait a second, no, he's actually more clear about this than we are, that this is all an elaborate hoax. And for it to not matter, that takes me back to the cameo that Jesus isn't judging, he's not condemning, he is just concerned about Helen's learning. And that's what it is about us. It's about our learning. And what I get so excited about is that it's about our learning to express love. That's it. In every instance, in every point that we face in our lives where we're hitting, you know, some rough patches in relationships, it's about coming back to that experience of love and allowing the love to be expressed through us. I've shared many times on the calls how I have a family member who hates A Course in Miracles. I cannot talk to them about it. And we've had a lot of difficulty in our relationship over the years. And it's been through me actually doing the course and literally stepping into a willingness to express love, even in the face of feeling like I'm being attacked, that our relationship has been just incredibly, incredibly transformed. It's been so healing. So Irene, thank you for that. That was a real gift.
I just want to add one quickie to that too, and it, about the love, and that's here. The love just so starts with love of self. Like he's telling her, lighten up. You're the one doing this to yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't need to do it to yourself. You know, so anyway, thanks a lot, Green. I finally made it to your group.
I'm so happy you're here. I'm so happy you're here. And I just want to also highlight what you just said too. We often feel like it's bad to love ourselves, that like love is for something for everybody else, but we're very much the same thing, who we truly are, as everybody else is. And we deserve to receive that love too. What we give, we receive. It's reciprocal. That's the word I'm looking for, like that. So if we're just giving it, it's not a true giving until we receive that love also. So that's my little plug for loving yourself. There was a comment in the, and Irene, you got some thank yous here. There was one question just about elaborating on the miracles don't matter, miracle principle number two, and another person commented, and this is the case that, so the principle number two is that miracles in themselves do not matter. They are quite unimportant. And that is because the real miracle is not the form, it's the love that inspires them. It's that love that's coming through that matters, not necessarily the form through which that miracle comes forth. So I hope that helps. How fun. Thank you all so much for being here and for your comments and your questions. And Irene, it was so awesome to have you. Irene is a Course in Miracles teacher. She's written a number of books. She's also very much into the 12 steps. I'm just thinking your TGFTV episode isn't public, but you know, that show that you do, it's TGFTV. She hosts that. I'm just happy you could be here and share with us. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Oh, I love everybody. I love you all. Have a wonderful week, and we will put a little earmark in your book. And next week we will read cameo number 3. I'm looking forward to it. Good night, everybody.
Love you all.
Thank you.
We love you too.
Bye bye.
It's right.
Aww. I'm so happy. Bye, everyone. Bye.
Bye.